Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to the Newcastle Natter. My name is Fergus Craig and I am joined by Paul Doolan.
Hello.
And Dave Watson.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. How you doing, guys? Dave, you all right?
I'm all right, yeah. I've got some terrible news. My wife came home today after picking up my little boy from nursery, and we've got a 3-year-old's birthday party on Sunday at 3 till 5 p.m.
Ooh. That's the worst possible news that story could have ended with. I had to stop myself throwing in so many inappropriate jokes there.
Just what the fuck? Like, I'm going to have to try and get out of it. I'm going to have to.
I think I've decided that at toddlers' birthday parties, it's perfectly okay to sit in the corner and look at your phone and then just like start hopping around the table when the cake comes out, just whispering to the other dads, are the parents going to get any? There's enough for parents there. They're going to offer it to the parents.
Yeah.
That's what I've decided. It's okay to do for birthday parties. Paul, are you okay?
I'm good. I'm also, my Sunday's looking like I might be driving between sort of 2 and 5. I'm trying to rejig my Sunday. But then, I mean, this is all for the Man U away game, which isn't on TV, even though it's 2 o'clock on a Sunday, which I find baffling.
Bastards. They're bastards. I've got a tweet here from Penn's World. And he says, does doing the Natter feel a bit pointless now that everything is going well and we're on our way to being a well-run, functioning club? Do you secretly crave the return of Bruce, as his antics would guarantee 45 minutes of great content each week? I mean, I see what he's getting at.
Yeah.
Do you, Paul?
I do, in a way, because you think in the time we've been doing the pod, some of the batshit mental things we've had to discuss, things like Joe Kinnear scouting one of our own players and not realising, or that press conference where, which one of you, Simon Bird, you're a cunt. There's been no end of madness. And now, like, the topics of discussion are much better from a fan's point of view, but it's quite hard to get worked up of, like, there's not a huge amount interesting to say about we're playing a really good high press.
Yeah.
But we're getting more recoveries than ever before in the final.
There were a lot of opportunities for gallows humour, weren't they, Dave? I like to think that the Mike Ashley era was a bit like, sort of, although 1930s Germany was bad.
Was the Newcastle Natter the thriving cabaret scene?
Yeah, it was actually a thriving cabaret scene. There was a lot of good art that came out of it.
Well, it's also a lot easier to be angry and talk a lot about how how shit performances are, or how, you know, insufferable the manager is or something. I mean, Jesus, right now, I mean, there's still plenty wrong at the club. We can still talk about what's wrong at the club. It just gets a bit hard to make it entertaining when our owners are, you know, fucking awful.
Well, with that all said, now let's go through the miserable sort of workings of just going through our 5-1 victory against.
Oh, it's entertaining, wasn't it? It was a good fun match. There was plenty going on.
Paul, you watched it, didn't you?
I did. It sounds mad to say, I thought Brentford were quite good. I was quite worried for a lot of the game. I mean, this sounds a very stupid thing to say, but barring their three massive fuck-ups, they played quite well. I thought they played better than Fulham, say, in the game before, or even Palace and Bournemouth. I thought Brentford looked a much better outfit, and especially when they got the goal back, the Tony penalty. I was scared, but luckily we've got Bruno, who won't let Newcastle fans be scared for more than 2 minutes.
I know.
He looked offended that Brentford were trying to come back into the game, so he just ran 40 yards and smashed the ball in.
So what did you think about the penalty that they received?
I mean, it was a hammer.
I've got no memory of it whatsoever.
It was Dan Burn had his hand up in the air, which I think you would say was in an unnatural position, even though he's facing away from the ball, and the ball hit his arm. To be honest, I don't know the new handball rule well enough to know if it should have been. I know I didn't want it to be a penalty, if that counts.
But it's interesting because that weekend there were a bunch of different questionable handball decisions. Like, I think it was there was one where the was it Saliba of Arsenal gave like didn't have a penalty awarded against him because it was deemed it was too close and there was no intention for him to hit the ball. Well, Burn was like right next to the player, and like you say, Paul, he was facing away and his arm was up. But I don't think that like jumping with your arms by your side is not natural. So this unnatural position is horseshit.
It was up in the air though. It wasn't like by his side.
But if you jump,
and I do,
you want to get all the time. You lift your hands to get elevation or to kind of balance yourself, and you jump like an Irish dancer.
I jump, hands behind my head, land into a knee slide, light up a cigarette, get on my motorcycle and ride off. Because I'm cool. These days,
I only jump into a pool of babes.
It's hard, to be honest as well, on the handball, it's hard to engineer any kind of feeling on it because we won 5-1.
Yeah, fair. I'm trying to mine it.
You've managed to find the most intelligent piece of information to get. The handball, I don't get it. I feel like it is always going to be, everything's always going to be open to interpretation. And there's always just going to be people screaming at clouds, going, but this one was given and this one wasn't. And it's like, well, it's always going to be a nuanced thing because it's not a binary thing about like, it's not like engineering. It's like, it's almost art. Do you know what I mean? It's always going to be.
There's never going to be a robotic consistency across all referees, just like there won't across all traffic wardens. Like, some will give you a ticket for something and some won't.
Speaking of robotic consistency,
it's lovely.
Bruno Guimaraes, based on his performances since he joined the club, have we in the Premier League era had a better midfielder?
I personally, I would say that he's ahead of Kabay already. and Yohan Cabaye is often talked about as being one of our best central midfielders, I would say that the only two that are in the conversation with him are Rob Lee and Gary Speed. But then they were there for a long time, and there's a certain degree of nostalgia because of the success, or, you know, kind of success that we enjoyed while they were at their peak with us. So I think Bruno has to be here for a little bit longer, and for us to be playing at that higher level, for me to immediately say, oh yeah, he is a better player. I mean, technically, I would say that he's got more ability than Gary Speed or Rob Lee, but their longevity, we'll see. We'll see how his form.
Yeah, I'm just talking about, I mean, again, there's no finite answer to this, but like, he's only been with us a while, but on his performances so far, I mean, the last great midfielder that I remember is, well, I remember them as a duo, Cabaye and Tiote.
Mm.
But I mean, is it hyperbole to suggest that he's almost both players in one?
I think that's the thing with Bruno, is he's the most complete midfielder I think we've ever had. But if you look at, there was something, I don't know if it was on Match of the Day or on Twitter or something, but he's all those kind of metrics for midfielders, like through balls,
carries,
exorcist, yeah, carries, but also tackles.
Exorcist?
As in expected assists.
Right, okay.
He's done the most exorcisms.
Yeah. I just got this image of him like flicking holy water at.
Yeah. But he, I think in a way, he's probably not as good a defensive midfielder as Tiote, but he, or as like Kante, say. But he can do, I can't think of many other midfielders that can do all of those things. There's normally some kind of trade-off.
Yeah. I think Jamie Carragher was talking about it with Roy Keane on some show. And Carragher was, his statement was that he is, like you're saying, Paul, the complete midfielder. And we talk a lot about, oh, we need a defensive midfielder, or he's an excellent attacking midfielder. Like Kevin De Bruyne, he contributes to the defensive, the defending that Man City do, but he doesn't get, like, he doesn't get stuck into the tackles like Bruno does, and but he is more attacking. So I think he is complete, but I'd much rather him doing all of his business at the top end of the pitch, and have somebody, like, if we could find someone like Tiote.
Is he a bit like a modern version of early Roy Keane, like the first half of Roy Keane's Man United career, where he was more progressive?
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Brian Robson are the two that spring to mind for me.
Because he's not like a Cabaye in the or De Bruyne in the sense of, like, you know, well, he does play in some really nice long passes, but
he's got that in his locker.
I was going to say that playmaker. He is a playmaker, isn't he? But
yeah.
I guess I don't see him as like a free kick taker. But that's not. That's actually a small thing of football, isn't it?
Yeah. I know what you're trying to get at. Like, he maybe isn't as, as graceful, maybe, as De Bruyne is. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But he's got that sort of Roy Keane sort of dynamism.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. I like him. I think we should keep him. This thing about Real Madrid and him saying that Real Madrid's the best football team on the planet, and, you know, they're amazing. Yeah, yes. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but he's essentially saying, yeah, they're great. But then he immediately says, but I want to stay in, you know, I want to do well here, and I want to be a legend here and all the rest of it. And this is, I think we spoke about it before, where, like, if someone like Real Madrid comes in for Bruno Guimaraes and throws all the money in the world at us, we'd probably take it because, like...
Yeah, that sounds like a man who's saying, I would like to play for Real Madrid, but I should probably say something after that. Nice.
Yeah. It's hardly closing the door on the speculation, is it?
No, but then who would close the door? Like, Erling Haaland's only just moved to Man City, but if Real Madrid come knocking and they throw £200 million at him, he'll go to Real Madrid? Because
I'm happy to close the door on any speculation about me going to Real Madrid. I'm happy to rule it out now.
Yeah.
I will rule it out. So let's have a break now. And then there's still lots more to talk about in the Brentford game, and lots of correspondence from you. And there's also the thorny issue of the name of our stadium. Much to talk about, but we'll speak to you in a moment.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to the Newcastle Natter. Good break, guys.
Lovely.
Superb.
We've got a question from Superb. Superb. What were you going for? Scottish?
Aye. Yeah. Bit both.
About, I don't know, 15 years ago, I filmed an advert in Rotterdam with a Dutch director called Sven Super. And he said things like superb, yes. And then I can't do it. I'm just doing it Scottish, but I don't know why, but that reminded me of that. Okay.
It's a nice walk down memory lane, thanks.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
More on adverts that I've done through the years on your future podcasts. Okay. Paul M says, does Murphy keep his place on Sunday after starting in two big wins, or does Alan St. Maximan come back into the starting 11? Ditto, Joe Linton, as in, does he come back into the squad or the starting 11? What do you think on that? Jacob Murphy, Dave.
I think Jacob Murphy's doing a really good job at the minute. He's clearly not as good as St. Maximan, but the level of pressing that kid's doing, he's a grown man, that man's doing, is allowing us to maintain that level of pressure up the top end of the pitch. Now, against Man U, I don't know if we're going to be pressing as high, and his lack of technical ability and his lack of, like, killer balls and stuff, there's a good argument to drop him, but it was his pressing that got us the second goal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the goal that he actually scored, but it was his pressing without touching the ball that created it, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think there's a really good argument for starting with the same 11, but introducing St. Maximum and Joe Linton later on in the game, but earlier than they have been introduced. So, like, bringing them on when we need a bit of physicality in the centre of the park that Joe Linton can provide. And if we need to take advantage of some tired legs and stuff and bring them up, bring St. Maximum as like an impact. And Jesus, like the own goal that Ethan Pinnock scored for us, that was because St. Maximum, with a simple drop of his shoulder, a quick change of direction, he beat one man and put a beautiful slide rule pass through for Joe Linton to run on. And Joe Linton, like, put the cross in that Pinnock turned through. But I think that if you start Joe Linton, Bruno doesn't get as much freedom because currently Sean Longstaff is playing the almost out-and-out defensive midfield role. Like, he still gets involved in attacks and stuff, but he's there to do the breaking up. And I don't know if you get that with Joe Linton, who prefers to push forward with it.
I like the idea of, I've always been Murphy's biggest defender. He's not turned into the player that I had hoped, but he is doing a lot of good work. And I'm persuaded by the art. Obviously, as the season goes on, you expect St. Maximin to be starting before Jacob Murphy.
On that point,
I like the argument that against Man U, that you start with Jacob Murphy because he's in such a good run of form, and then you would hope that, and because you can have five substitutes this season, that doesn't, you're pretty much guaranteed to be able to have an opportunity to bring on from the bench the substitutes that you'd hoped to do beforehand. And I would like to think that we will still be in the game early on in the second half, and Sitt Maximin is a game-changing player who can come on with a point to prove and do something.
So I was going to ask you a question about something you just said, where you said that Jacob Murphy hadn't become the player that you thought he could be. I would put it to you that he has. It's just the standards of the rest of the team have risen so much that actually Jacob Murphy, he is, like, we all thought that he would be like a, well, we all hoped he would be like a mid-table Premier League.
Dave, have you heard Fergus talk about Jacob Murphy?
I have.
Clearly thought he was the next Ronaldinho.
I had wild expectations for Jacob Murphy. I remember me and Paul went to see Newcastle at Stamford Bridge a few years ago, and we were pretty much destroyed by Chelsea, but there were a few mazy runs from Jacob Murphy that got me thinking that he was the next something. You know, I had high hopes for him.
Oh, so we're talking like you're.
I'm not saying Ballon d'Or. I'm saying Sean Wright Phillips.
I think he's sort of fast starting to look like our best dribbler behind Sitt Maximin, and he's probably a better presser than him. I think the most encouraging thing with Murphy and a few other players in our squad is that before there was this kind of quite large section of our squad where you thought they're on not bad wages and we'll never be able to sell them on. Whereas you think players like Fabian Scher, who you thought would have to go on a free at some point, Murphy, Emil Kraft, suddenly they're decent players who you can get money for, but also they're very good for squad cohesion because they're good enough now when they come in, but they're not expecting to start. I think even after the last two games he's had, Murphy can't really complain if Sitt Maximin comes in for him. It's quite hard to have that type of squad to manage.
Andy Sheldon says, what areas do you see us trying to strengthen in January and which players would make sense for us? What I would suggest is that I say what I would suggest, despite the fact that one of you made this point before we actually started recording the podcast, but I was going to give you the opportunity to say it. beforehand, a lot of people have been talking about right wing, hadn't they? That had been the assumption.
Yeah, a couple of people have been talking about it before this podcast.
Yeah, but that was the role that we needed to fill. But Dave, Paul, do you feel like in the last few games there's anything, any players that have formed that has sort of like perhaps changed the thinking on that?
That's a really good question. Yeah. How did you... That's why you're paid the big bucks. Paul, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, Miggy looks like a different player. This is you sort of think we'll know more about who we need to sign when we get there. Because every time you think there's a gap in our squad, something seems to happen on the training pitch that creates these new players with the same names.
Yeah, no one had anticipated Joe Linton becoming one of the Premier League's best midfielders.
Yeah.
I would say there's still some significant weaknesses in our squad. I think we're lacking a defensive midfielder that can really get the most out of the Willock and Gumiers and even Joe Linton. I don't think Sean Longstaff's that player, even though he's playing well. I still think that
on the Longstaff stuff.
Yeah. Though,
I think Bruno's been playing as a number six and Longstaff's been playing as an eight. I think Bruno, even against Brentford, was our defensive midfielder. So you sort of think, I agree, Longstaff and Willock probably both don't get into our starting 11. But I think when Shelby comes back, maybe he goes back into there and Bruno goes further up.
Well, and the other thing is that this is the peak of Almiron's form, in my opinion. So I think that the right side of the pitch is still somewhere where we could strengthen, even though Isak can play out there and so can Almiron. St. Maximum can swap wings, Murphy can swap wings. You could put Anderson out there. But if we were to get somebody, and I use him just because it's a measure of the caliber of player that we're now able to attract. If we were to go off and get James Maddison, fucking of course you do. Moussa Diaby, fucking of course you do. Because they are better than the best that we've got by orders of magnitude.
Yeah, because we have, you know, it's just a complete changing of mindset, isn't it? Where, you know, actually top six squads have a few good players in every position.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if January comes along and we do go off and sign, say, just for argument's sake, we go off and spend 30, 40 million on James Maddison. I wouldn't be surprised if we also pulled in a young striker from Poland, a young defender from somewhere else, and fattened out the depth of the squad. Like, we've signed that Garang Kual, who's likely to be shipped out straight away on loan so he can get his visa. But I wouldn't be surprised if we were off to sign some young players to fatten out the squad, and actually the first team doesn't change much, only by one player.
Right. What else? Sorry, I just like went into a complete daze there.
Sorry, do you want to talk more about the fucking adverts you did in Northern Europe?
Yeah, all right. I've done...
I'm regretting it already. I'm regretting it.
Yeah, I've done a lot. I did an Anasol advert in
Germany.
I did an Anasol advert in Italy. I did an Anasol advert.
You're the face of Anasol.
Yeah.
There's a podcast title for you.
I was for a while the face of European insurance. I've done about three or four insurance adverts for different countries, like Switzerland, Netherlands, Norway. There's just something about my face for a while that made Europeans want to buy insurance.
Maybe they just look at you and think, better not risk it.
Gateshead chap says, stadium rights, naming rights, is it worth it? This is something that's come up in the last couple of days. Dave, tell us how that came about.
Well, essentially, because there was an interview with Darren Eales today on BBC Newcastle.
You know who he is?
He's our CEO.
Yeah.
And there's talk that we're appointing Peter Silverstone, who's going to be coming on as like chief commercial officer, so CCO. And the idea is that essentially, we're at the limit of our spending powers right now, even with all the money that the Saudis have got, because our incoming cash stream isn't big enough, because Ashley just neglected it for the 14 years. So the idea is we need new income streams, and part of that is commercialization, naming rights for the stadium, surely new sponsorship deal instead of what do you call it?
On Fun 88.
We've already got like Noon sleeve sponsors. We've got all of these things. That's what the guy's being brought into, this Peter Silverstone. Part of that is naming the stadium. And I'm torn on this, because I think that if we want to attract the best players, we have to be able to give them good wages, which means we have to increase our commercial side of things. I'm really nervous that we're going to end up with like Saudi Air at St. James's Park or the Saudi Air Stadium or whatever.
I think they're saying the name St. James's Park will still be included in it. But I think as well, the plan seems to be to have a series of sort of town hall style consultations with fans to see if it would fly or not. My hunch is that, unlike the Sports Direct at St. James's thing, this would be less unpopular with fans because money would be flowing into the club from it rather than potential value flowing out because of it.
And because there's a general vibe now that amongst a large proportion of the fan base, for understandable reasons, that everything if Mike Ashley came up with an idea, it was awful. And if the Saudis do it, it's amazing because they're amazing. Thank you to our wonderful owners.
If the Saudis introduced giant mugs, we'd go mad.
I do think there's, like Paul says, there's a stark difference between what, like the having the town hall meetings to discuss it, having like saying, oh, St. James's Park is going to stay in it, rather than the owners just going, oh, we're going to advertise Saudi Air and we're not going to give you any money for it. We're not even going to talk to you about it and we're going to call it something clunky and awful and we're going to plaster the roof and have like Saudi Air like banners everywhere. I think that that's a better way of doing it for St. James's Park. I am still not sold on the idea of naming rights for stadiums because I think it's a shame. It takes it further away from the original club, the original beating heart of the city.
I don't have, like, if you take the Saudis out of it, I'm not that bothered. I mean, I'm no more bothered about the name of a stadium than I am any other part of the commercialization of football. I would rather get rid of shirt sponsors. But that's not going to happen, right? Unless you're not in a forest, you know, sort it out. I don't like shirt sponsors is a part of football. That's not changing. But the shirt means more to me than the name of the stadium. I don't really give a shit about that. I give a bit of a shit. But like, in terms of, I accept that football is one of the most commercial enterprises on earth. It is, that's the way it is.
The horse has bolted, really, hasn't it?
Exactly. So I'm not that bothered about the name of the stadium. I'd be more bothered if, like, we were going to move stadium to some, like,
So if they were to build a new stadium like on Exhibition Park just behind St. James's, like if they were just to brand new stadium, call it whatever the fuck you like. I don't care then. Like genuinely, if they wanted to call it, you know, Al Qaeda, that's maybe a bit too far. I wouldn't care what they called the new stadium. Renaming St. James's Park, it takes a little bit away from me. It really does. It would be like if they were to rename Anfield or Old Trafford. But when Eastlands was now referred to solely as the Etihad, I don't care because it's a brand new stadium.
No, I understand. I don't. If you gave me a choice between changing the name of St. James's and not changing it, I would choose not to change it. But like I say, it's not. It feels like holding your handbags up at like little things when, like Paul says, the horse is bolted. In terms of it, Saudi, I've said a lot on this. Anything to do with our owners, anything that reminds me of it, makes me feel a bit queasy.
If it was like the something akin to the AIG Arena, like if the AIG at St. James's Park, whatever they call it, like if it was a hedge fund who was sponsoring us, or like fucking Twitter or something like, would you, the Twitter Arena, would you Would you mind?
Well, yeah, I would mind. But, like, what I'm saying is, it's, you know, I've sort of, like, come to peace with it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think it's not
peace with the new owners. But, like, no.
I think not that it is a binary choice, but if it was a choice between renaming St. James's Park or going to a new stadium, I would much rather rename St. James's Park.
Really?
Yeah. The new stadium would almost certainly be sort of out of town. That feels like the historical community asset that has to be protected. I think if there's a new name that includes St. James's Park in it and there's a sponsor on it, that doesn't feel mental.
The two sites that have been talked about to build a new stadium are on the site of the current Newcastle Arena, which is right by the riverside, and there is sufficient land there to have a, you know, fucking 70,000-80,000 seat stadium and all the stuff that goes with it, like the car parking situation, everything, and also just moving St. James's Park about, you know, 400 yards into Exhibition Park and into Leeds Park behind it. So the talk is there's no appetite for moving it out to like fucking Gosforth or anything like that. No, it's the only two sites that I've heard talk about are those two, which are city centre sites.
Moving stadium. I didn't expect us to talk about this, but might as well very quickly. Moving stadium has two like big obvious things going for it. One, more revenue, which is sort of negligible, really, in Premier League football now, anyway. And two, that more fans would get to see them. So you can't like argue with that, really. But I don't really like new stadiums. I went to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday, which is meant to be like the best of the new stadiums. I think it's fine. But I used to love White Hart Lane. I like the old Sabutio stadiums.
It's like compare the old and the new West Ham grounds. Like one was far, far superior.
I know that, you know, Upton Park was a great old ground, and the new park, it's not a football stadium. It's not. If you compared, like, if you go to, I don't know, if you go to Goodison Park, it's a fucking shithole. It's an awful old stadium. And
Goodison Park is one of my favourite stadiums.
I fucking hate it. Terrible old stadium.
But I think as well, there are ways of growing without moving stadium. You can get, like, if you look at Old Trafford, say, it's not necessarily the best stadium, but it still has that old feel and has managed to grow into a modern, like, mega stadium.
When you build a new stadium, basically, when you build a new stadium, you have to make it as comfortable as you can, right?
Yeah.
You make it like you do all the things that are sensible to do building a stadium in the modern world. I would much rather go to Goodison Park.
Oh, fuck.
Because I like those old shitholes. I think they've got like a real
character.
Character, exactly. Yeah.
And the only thing,
Hotspur Stadium, which is like, as far as I'm aware, is the best that you can do with a new stadium, and there's nothing that I can like tangibly complain about it. But I'd rather be in Goodison Park.
So the only thing that stops St. James's Park from being expanded on site is the Grade One listed buildings behind the East Stand. Leeds Terrace. So essentially, for anybody who doesn't know, if it's a Grade One listed, you can't knock it down. It's like you can't fucking touch that thing. So you couldn't really expand the East Stand, which is currently the smallest stand. You could fatten out the Gallagher. You could definitely like build back and build up. You'd lose Strawberry Place, which is the road there, but you could turn it into some kind of fucking fan park or something and weave a road around it. So there are ways to expand St. James's, but I don't know.
Okay, well,
problem sure with that. All of these things, what if you do the construction work to do it and a kiddie gets hurt? Then what do you do about that?
Yeah, Dave. Are you for kiddies getting hurt? Well, you broke. He's getting hurt, Dave.
Just depends where the
problem. That's why I think we just need to stop it.
You're just jumping into this so recklessly.
I just don't care.
What if a big pile of bricks fall on a kid?
Yeah. As long as it's not mine. Motherfucking
kid. All these steel girders. Imagine if that landed on some kiddies.
What if
you two are thinking a lot about kiddies? I'm gonna turn this around on you two. Why are you thinking about kids so much? What's going on?
What if they build a new stadium and when they're like going into the place where they've set out to build it and they're looking at building the foundations and everything, and then they find an ancient burial ground, and then like the club gets haunted.
Yeah. And what if a pram falls in it?
What if a pram falls in it with a kid in it?
With a kiddie.
Well, it's not called the Gallagher for jokes. It's literally where we killed people. Exactly. So there will be.
Well, that's, I'd never thought about that. So I guess that was part of the appeal for the Saudis. I'd never thought about that. Okay, our next game is on Sunday. It's against Manchester United. It is away. As Paula said, it's a 2 o'clock kickoff, but it's not on British TV, unfortunately. Although I will be in Corfu, so maybe it'll be on TV there. Who knows?
You're filming an anus, all that.
Yeah, another one.
Any burglars in the Camberwell area listening? Fergus is going to be in Corfu.
Yeah, mine's the biggest house. Manchester United, Old Trafford, what do you think, Dave?
I think it's a difficult one to judge because they're morphing they're morphing into a counter-attack side and we're morphing into a possession side. So they've got some excellent players. Martial is going to be injured, but they've got that Anthony kid. They've got fucking Cristiano Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes. They've still got very, very good players.
Anthony looks very good, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It looks like he maybe does more tricks than are necessary, but then he does seem to have some serious end product.
Mm. So I'm not... I'd be happy with a draw.
You'd be happy with a draw, but what's your prediction for the score?
Draw, 1-1.
1-1. Paul?
I think they're playing... We're recording on Wednesday. They play on Thursday night, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
I think. Help. I don't know. It's weird. I think this is the most confident I've been going into Man U away. But that says more about our improvements than I think they've improved on last season. If it was Man U last season and Newcastle this season, I'd quite comfortably think 2-0.
Or Man U a month ago.
Yeah.
Or 6 weeks ago, or whatever it was.
I think we're going to win.
I've also just checked, and they've got Tottenham after us on the Wednesday, so they've got the was it Nicosia or something like that? Then us, then Tottenham. It's a string of difficult games for them. So 3-1, you say, Paul?
I think 3-1.
3-1 away at Old Trafford.
Yep,
that'd be great.
Ooh-wee.
What about you?
Brilliant.
I think we'll lose 2-1. I don't really know. Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
I thought we knew. I thought we were doing this.
I think it's one of those instances where I think you're right. We've got a much better chance than we have had in 90% of our fixtures against Man United in the last 15 years. So all results are possible. As in win, lose or draw.
It is nice to be a team where the opposition is going into games thinking, why do we have to play them now? Kind of thing. Mm. That's not happened for a long time.
And it feels like things have, I don't want to say turned around, but we all agreed that we'd put in a lot of good performances this season. But a couple of weeks ago, we'd only won one game. We'd only lost one game, and the rest had been draws. But in the last 2 weeks, we've had a 4-1 and a 5-1. And it's been 20 years or something since we've had two games with that margin of victory. So, in a row.
But I think just the performances before these latest two games have been good enough to win the games. It's just we've been lacking Callum Wilson or St Maximum or Bruno, which is, you know.
Yeah, and there have been a lot of bad decisions. But that was the thing about these last two games as well. We've still been lacking players. We've been Isak has been unavailable, Joe Linton's been unavailable, St Maximin's been unavailable, and yet we've won both those games handsomely. So we are at what looks like the beginnings of a very good run of form, hopefully. We'll see. Thank you very much, Dave Watson.
Thanks, Fergus.
Thank you, Paul Doolan.
Thank you.
And thank you to you, the Newcastle Natter listener. Goodbye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.